Bonus episode today, Cultivators. That's right, the Grow Pass member podcast airs once a week ad-free, and today we're giving you an episode with the great Rizo Rich. Now, my growpass.com membership is currently open, so if you love having an extra podcast every week with no ads, then I suggest you go and jump in and join up immediately. We have Wolfman and Rich and Mary Beth on the podcast all the time, along with all the Growcast from years past. Growcast and Homegrown Helpers ad-free, AMAs every month, discounts, giveaways, resources, and more, mygrowpass.com. But for now, enjoy this episode of the Member Podcast with Rizo Rich as a little bonus. Thank you all for listening. Remember to check out membership at mygrowpass.com and enjoy the show. Hello, Grow Pass members. Thank you for tuning into the Grow Pass Member Podcast today. Sorry, I'm a little punchy already. Thank you for being part of the Grow Pass membership program. We are having a blast with you members. Lots of new members signing up during that registration period. Our numbers are growing. Our donation total is growing. I just dropped a massive $341 donation on New England's Veterans Alliance, thanks to you guys. And that brings our total up to almost like $700 donated to charity. Things are going very, very well. It's all thanks to you, members. I hope you're having a good time exploring your dashboard and all the perks. Make sure to get at us for the AMAs. Drop your question off in the form so we can address it live. And stay tuned for all the giveaways and all the fun stuff. Loving you, members. Loving Grow Pass. Today, we got Rizo Rich back on the line. A show favorite, an OG, a GOAT. You were getting some serious love in the chats, Rizo Rich. We do appreciate you coming on, buddy. Thank you for joining us today.
Love being on. It's always a good time.
Well, when you're like, when you do, you know, kind of take the approach that you do, which is just helping growers answer their questions, like that establishes a positive relationship that lasts a lifetime. Would you agree?
I do. And that's what it's all about to me, you know, is the community and helping people, collaborating, you know, all that kind of stuff. So I enjoy it. It makes it really fun and just makes it much more worthwhile. And
totally,
you know, all that good stuff.
Makes it rewarding. They love it, man.
It does.
They hop in the chat, say how much that you've helped them. So we appreciate
you,
man.
I'm glad to hear that. That's awesome.
Today's a cool topic too, because I know that this is a topic that I would say a lot of good growers truly master over the years. We're talking about clone health. We're talking about taking cuttings. We're talking about popping seeds. We're talking about propagation, the very, very beginning of the growing process. And this is really something where, like, there's a lot of unknowns in farming. But if you get good at this, you know, propagation game, you should be able to get, you know, 90% success rate, close to 100% success rate if you understand all the processes and you do all the right things. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I totally agree. I mean, it's definitely, like you said, there's never any guarantees in farming. That's number one. But, you know, once you get experienced enough when it comes to popping seeds and clones, you can get pretty confident in knowing, you know, at this point with popping seeds, it's usually, for me at least, and, you know, I don't mean this in like a bragging kind of way or anything, but it's almost always 100%. And same with clones.
Oh, damn.
I mean,
nice.
Every now and then it's 90%, you know, but if I cut 20 clones, they usually always make it. And, you know, if any diet would be one or two. Same with seedlings, you know, if I pop seeds, unless there's something wrong with the seeds, if they're viable, they usually all pop, you know, I'm usually not throwing away seeds that didn't pop and, you know, unless they're bad, like I said, but,
nice.
But usually it's something like you said that you can start to get really comfortable with and at least have really good success rates with, you know?
So I want to extract that potential and share it with the listeners who maybe are just getting started, or maybe they're great at growing, but this propagation thing just isn't quite their highest calling. They're not having the success that they wish they would.
It can be tricky.
Yeah, for sure. It's just a little bit of a different game, I would say. So
it's something that you have to get down, a rhythm that you as a grower have to figure out what works good for you. Because like you, there's just so many different methods to it. So you have to figure out what gives you the highest success rate in your situation with your environment.
That's a really good point. I want to start from a little bit of a broader perspective, ask you a question that I hear, you know, breeders talk about, growers talk about, and that's cuttings versus seeds as far as quality, as far as potential is really how I like to put it. The common consensus being that seeds give you a little bit more of a crapshoot and maybe a little bit higher of a ceiling for potential for expression, you know, all the things we're after, potency, aroma, things like that. Whereas cuttings are a little bit more uniform and maybe a little lower of a ceiling for that incredible potential. Do you agree or disagree with that statement?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. Because, you know, with a cutting, you know what you're getting with a cutting. It's out before somebody selected it. So like it's, you know, you might get it and it might genetically express a little bit different in your setup, or, you know, it might come out a little better in your setup or not as good maybe, but you know what to expect with it. Whereas a seed is, like you said, kind of a crapshoot. You might get something incredible. You don't know what to expect from popping seeds. You could get that unicorn pheno, or you might get nothing good. You might get four or five good, you know, females that are keepers. It's hard to say. It's definitely a crapshoot, and there's definitely a bigger potential for getting something super exciting. And I mean, with that being said, you can get a clone of something that really excites you and it be just as exciting, but there's not going to be really anything new
or explosive. Exactly. Because
you know?
it is just that, it is a virtual clone when it comes to all of those attributes.
What you know.
Yeah, so. Totally. Whereas the seed is almost more comparative to like a human birth, where there are potentials for all these different things, you know, athletic
Definitely.
Potential, abnormality potential, kind of the same thing when you're dealing with the seed versus the clone aspect. So yeah, that's a good point. What's always fascinated me is this idea of overcloning and doing it in synthetic grows versus organic grows, and kind of messing with the genetics, losing a little bit of the desirability. That really fascinates me. So I don't know. I don't think that a lot of people would agree with that, to be honest, but it came up on Growcast and I could certainly see how that could be the case. You know what I mean?
What's that? I'm sorry. I lost you there for a minute.
Yeah, I explained it poorly. Over-cloning, you know, people call it genetic drift,
oh, yeah.
Even though I guess that's a misnomer. But
that's
idea,
a very interesting topic for sure.
And the idea that it may be because of the farming practices themselves, you know, Joshua Rutherford
right.
saying we don't observe this in the super soil genetics. This is something that is from synthetic farming, according to him. I don't know if you
right.
have a solid, because yeah, you're an organic grower, but you're also very science minded, so.
Yeah, and you know, the genetic drift thing is very interesting, because I've always cloned from a clone and never kept mothers or anything like that, and haven't seen genetic drift. Haven't seen it intentionally. There has been times where I have seen genetic drift in plants, where I grew them once and they were really good, and then after a couple runs, they just weren't as good, but usually it's because something happened to those plants, like either they caught some kind of virus or something like that.
Oh.
So I'm, you know, kind of suspicious, like Rutherford, like Joshua Rutherford said, that maybe something was going on in the growing practices or something, you know, a virus was caught and has
yeah.
infected it or got inside of it.
That's
and that's
so crazy.
What I think genetic drift is. You know, because if the plant's healthy, I've been able to clone from clone for years and never saw any genetic
Me too.
Drift.
And a lot of people
I
say
that. I have an uncle that grew the same exact cutting and monocropped it for 25 years and never saw any genetic drift. So
was he a
I
synthetic
really
grower?
Think,
just for conjecture here?
He actually was a synthetic grower too. Actually,
see, there you go.
More synganic. You know, he grew in organics, but also used synthetics as well. So he did a little bit of both.
Interesting.
You know, from the 80s to the early 2000s. So you only had so much to work with
right.
during some of those times. But
man,
yeah,
that's
I mean,
interesting.
He never saw any genetic drift. I think it all, and like you said, I don't know for sure, but I think it kind of boils down to practices and if the plant.
And, but like you said,
something.
Viruses, exactly. Because that's what's crazy.
I think it's viral or
yeah.
you know, something like that.
That freaks me out, man. That's crazy that these plants can catch these viruses and then suddenly they're, you know, anyone who hasn't heard of Dudding, or I think it's called like the Hops latent viroid.
Yeah, the Dudding.
Yeah, go ahead and Google
yeah,
that
exactly
if you haven't heard
what
of it.
You're talking. I've heard of it for sure. You know, it's another interesting subject. And, you know, with the genetic drift, you know, and what also makes it seem more viral too is you can send out plants that have had a genetic drift problem and they can be, you know, tissue culture to come back to their original vigor and form. So it's really hard.
Oh, wow. Really?
Yeah. It's really hard to look away and say that a genetic drift isn't from some kind of virus or something that's infected the plant. You know, like
that's
I said, I don't have any white papers, but I'm really with Joshua Rutherford on that, that it's gotta be something like that going on.
So fascinating. Hopefully we'll get some hard research on that in the coming years. Move on though. Let's talk about seed popping. This is something in my world, you know, I always took my own cuttings. Everyone's heard this. I never popped seeds, never popped cannabis seeds. I do remember germinating other types of like vegetable seeds, and it seems to be pretty uniform. You know, you got the paper towel method. Some people put the paper towel that, you know, they get it damp and you put the seeds kind of folded up in there. Some people put it in a Ziploc bag. Some people put it between two plates. Do you feel that like what 90% of people who are out there popping seeds, usually I'm not seeing them putting it into soil or doing any other method except for some sort of paper towel method?
Yeah, I mean, I definitely do see pretty much every method now a lot more prevalent than maybe 2 years ago. I do see a lot of people throwing it right in soil, but I do see a lot more paper towel, or I see a lot of people like putting them in cups of water and letting them open up. I've seen all sorts of different methods. For me, I've always stuck with the paper towel method because it gives me the best results, and it's just what I've always done, so I've stuck with it. But there is definitely many different ways. I have experimented with throwing them in soil. I just didn't have as good as a success rate with that. I like being able to see that the seeds popped open and then plant it and know that, okay, this one should pop up.
Right.
So that paper towel method is kind of my style of how I like to do it and why I think I've always stuck with it. It's just, okay, I put 10 seeds in and 10 of them popped or 9 of them popped and I can put them in soil and, you know for sure that these should come up. And if they don't, it's a problem. Otherwise, after a couple of days when I put them in soil, I'm like digging in the pot, looking to see if the seeds pop, what's going on, how come it hasn't broken ground.
Right.
I'm too impatient for that, you know? So I have to know what's going on before it goes, you know, in soil. Cause I don't like to dig them up and do that shit, you know, but I do get impatient and I want to know. So
do you do any prep? Do you soak your seeds? I've heard people soaking in water. I've heard people soaking in an enzyme mixture, like a little bit of Dr. Zymes in water. Do you do any of that?
I've heard of people doing that. I've heard of people using like sandpaper to scuff them. There's even a seed cracking tool. I've never used that. I've never sandpapered. I've always just done the paper towel method. I've never experimented so far with like putting it in an enzyme or even trying to pop them like in a cup of water. I've also seen people put them in a cup of water for like 24 hours, then take them out and put them in a paper towel to, I guess, maybe soften them up.
That's what I've seen. Yeah. I've seen less of the actually letting them sit. That's interesting. Letting them open up in water. But I have definitely seen a lot of the soaking and then putting in a paper towel.
Yeah. I've seen a lot of that too. The sandpaper thing I hear a lot of, I've never done it. I just kind of freaks me out a little bit. I know it can be done. I would over the sandpaper method, I'd probably do the putting it in a cup of water for 24 hours and then the paper towel. It just seems like, I don't know, a little less risky, but I guess if you're comfortable with sanding down a tiny little seed and not going too far, then so be it, you know, but I had seed packs come with little pieces of sandpaper before, which I thought was pretty interesting.
Well, they must stand behind it then. And yeah, I've seen it.
Yeah.
I've seen people stand behind the effect.
Stand behind it.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, I guess so. But yeah, that's one of those things where you can usually figure it out with the paper towel method, get it in the cup. And then really the key is that early seedling stage care. What do you do as far as wetting the soil? A lot of the times it's tough. If you're cutting open a new bag of soil, it might be wet enough, ready to go to where you don't need to really do anything. But like, what moisture level do you like to see when you're putting in the seed with the taproot? And how wet do you keep it? How do you water it when it's just a tiny little seedling?
The way I personally do it is, you know, I'll put the soil in the cup, make a little hole, put the seed in, bury it. And this is usually in a red solo cup, so you have some kind of a reference of what it's going in. And then I'll water, you know, the soil mixture, I usually use like I don't use like my super soil or anything. I'll use a Pro Mix, and then I'll cut it even further with more perlite. So it's really like a
not
high porosity.
Yeah,
more,
it's the opposite of a hot soil full of nutrients is what he's saying. You don't want to just throw it in there because it'll fry it, even if it's organic. It's so rich in nutrients that it'll choke out the plant.
Yeah, and this isn't like a ProMix HP. This is like a ProMix fruit, an organic fruit and vegetable. It does have some stuff. It's
really
light, though. It's like 0.005, you know, 0.0025, 0.005. It just happened to be what I had laying around. They really don't need any nutrition for the first couple weeks, but it's been working really good for me. And like I said, I can get it at the hardware store for like $6 a bag, really cheap. It just has the ProMix, some perlite, some mycorrhizae in it, and I want to say some kind of, I want to say kelp or seaweed powder or something. It doesn't have a lot in it.
But a little something. Would the HP work?
Nutrition.
Would you use the
HP? Yeah, the HP would work, right. Absolutely, you know, and you might not even need to add perlite to that, but I like to make it really, really high porosity, and once I put the seed in, I will actually water the whole cup through until there's a little bit of runoff and, you know, put it underneath the light. And then I'll let it, well, it's high porosity, so it dries really fast.
Good point. Yeah.
But, I'll water it through. So there's a little bit coming out the bottom, put it underneath the light. It'll pop up and then, you know, I'll let it suck up the water in that cup. And I actually have some seedlings right now, and the cup, I think, dried in about 3.5 to 4 days completely. So, I mean, it dries pretty quick for a seedling that doesn't have any roots and the cup's just drying. Cause what I found is if it does stay too moist with seedlings, those stems, since they're so thin and fragile, they can dampen off and then it pretty much dies. It's going to fall over, and which kind of leads me to my next thing of once I water it in completely and it comes up and I see that it's established and got some roots going on, I'll let that cup, you know, dry out and, not all the way, but damn close to it. And then I'll water the cup some more. But what I do with seedlings, because of that whole stem dampening off thing, and this is totally unnecessary, I just do it because it's worked good for me and it helps me avoid any seeds getting too moist or whatever and dampening off at the stem and dying, is I'll leave like a quarter to half inch dry circle radius around the base of the plant and not water that area and just water everything around it. So
damn,
the top of the soil,
that's some precision.
That stem is,
so you really like, try to avoid that kind of soil and stem contact, saturating that, you're saying, is really what you're worried about.
And like I said, in the beginning, you want it because you want to make sure that the roots get it. And I know many people who just water the cup in fine and don't do a little dry.
No, I like this though.
Around it.
Sure.
But this is what's helped me a lot because my environment tends to be humid. So if I, you know, have any extra water sitting in there too long, I have had seedlings, you know, dampen off and just peel over and die. And it's usually because the cup's too moist or, you know, whatever. And that's why I also started adding more perlite, but even that doesn't do it all the time with the humidity that I'm working with in my seedling and veg area. So yeah, just leave that little ring and it pretty much solved the problem, you know?
Nice. And you got
to
know your space.
It's kind of a pain in the ass, like you said, to do that, but. And for me, it isn't. I just have like a 5 or 10 mL syringe laying around, like not one with a needle on it, but just a syringe. And I just fill it up and go around to the cups and just water around them. And it's super simple and doesn't take long. You can get a syringe at Walgreens or anywhere. So a couple bucks, but
yeah, good point. Get in there and
it makes it really easy. It's just a small tip, you know, cause I'm sure other people have dealt with this before. You know, this dampening off thing. And I think a lot of it does have to do with your environment.
For sure.
Stuff like that. So
yeah,
it's just a little tip. That's all.
And I think that's key, knowing which stress factors you're going to face. Like you said, the humidity in your space. I'm worried about cold.
Yeah.
In my space.
And if you can mitigate it beforehand,
yes.
It just makes better success rates and not having to deal with it when there's already an issue. Because I found once that starts to happen, there's no like reversing it. You can't fix it. You know, the plant, it's going to just fold over and die.
Yeah, so, totally. That's one of the ways you can lose your seedling. That's true. What do you do as far as the cold, though? I'm worried that I'm going to have trouble getting my cuttings to root. I'm worried that the seeds aren't going to be as vigorous in their growth because I'm in a cold, cold basement.
Right.
I've got a little space. I actually have heat down there, but it just doesn't work so great, you know? And I know that that's actually going to probably be a benefit. You know, a lot of people play with low temp grows later.
Consistent though, but, doesn't it? Yeah. Like your temp's probably pretty consistent and probably stays like, you know, if it's 60, it probably stays 60 most of the time.
It doesn't swing too hard. On a cold day, the basement is a little bit noticeably chillier.
Okay.
But you're right. It isn't a hard, hard swing like my old shed in the backyard type grow.
Yeah, right. Yeah, I mean, if you're not having a hard swing and you can keep them in a decent range, you should be all right. It might slow them down a little bit, like you said. But, you know, I found that even with cooler temperatures, you can still have pretty good success with clones. I found, like I said, it might take a couple extra days to root. Right.
That's not bad though. That's fine.
Yeah. Mine are in, like I've said before on other shows, my grow is in an outbuilding that's uninsulated and it gets really cold. And I have my bigger tent exhausting into my little 3x3 that, you know, I keep cuttings in and stuff like that. And they do seem to do fine in winter.
That's wild, man.
They just take a little bit longer to root. The seedlings, same thing, you know, they just take a little longer to grow. I definitely recommend if you can bring the temps up too, you know, I wouldn't want to be doing this in 50 degree, 60 degree stuff. You're going to have a really hard time. But if you can at least get some decent numbers with a little heater, like you said, you know, I wouldn't be super concerned, you know.
And that's going to be a blessing later, I'm sure. You know, those terpenes are preserved in these cold temps. There's studies that show that cold temps can actually increase potency and all this stuff. It's almost like a trade-off. Because you're not going to get
might get a little bit smaller flowers, yes. But they're going to be a lot more potent. Absolutely.
I mean, is that what it comes down to, Rich, when you're playing with temps, if you're considering a low temp grow, well, first of all, you don't want swings. Like you said, that's just not good for the plant. But if you're going to have a consistent lower temp grow, you're just going to trade off a little bit of terpiness, a little bit of increased quality for a little bit of reduced quantity. It seems to me.
That's kind of what I've found, you know, with certain strains is that they seem to at least, from my observation, I don't want to make it seem like this is fact, but you know, from my observation, yeah, it seems like they pack on more trichomes. They get a little denser, but the buds aren't as big. You know, they're still decent size, still beautiful, but they do seem terpier and more trichome cover, just a little bit smaller. That's all.
Which makes sense because it's all volatile. And it's all volatilized and, you know, maybe, by heat.
Yeah, and maybe that density is making up for the lost size. I don't know, but they definitely seem to become more dense too, like rockier, harder.
Oh, that's true. Yeah, you get a little bit of the larfiness and stretch even with a little bit of heat. So it makes sense that it would go the other way.
Yeah, you'll lose a lot of that stretch when you're growing in cold because they don't want to stretch when it's cold. You know, they stay pretty short. So that's kind of another advantage of it, but it's definitely very risky playing around with cold temperatures. I do it all year round, you know, well, except for summer. Crazy. It works pretty good. People would be so surprised to know some of the shit you can get away with growing these plants. I see people that are spending so much time worried about their environment or VPD and getting it dialed in. People would be shocked if they knew most of these strains of cannabis can take a very huge, wide range of temperatures and humidities and,
right,
you know, stuff like that. Now, seedlings and clones and stuff, I wouldn't be doing this stuff with, but, you know, bigger plants, even flowering plants can take a lot of stress.
No, punishment, man. And there's actually, you know, a lot of links to stress and increased potency. There's some hokum ones, you know, side by side tests of putting screws in the plant that shows that there's not much difference. I don't know. Maybe it works in some strains and not others. I still hold an open mind, even though I see those side by sides. The more ambiguous dark period, which I'm a fan of, but a lot of people are saying, come on, it's negligible. The dark period before harvest is negligible. The less negligible cold shocking really works, man. If you water your plants with ice water, if you plummet the temperatures, It's a fact that you're going to get more color expression.
Oh, you're definitely going to get more color. Yeah. Absolutely.
And there's a lot of conjecture that you're going to get a little bit better of an aroma, maybe a little bit more sticky, ickiness. So, and I would agree with that. That's been my experience as well. So,
and you know, I would account a lot of the sticky terpiness too, probably to it being cold and a lot of those terpenes that volatilize off at lower temperatures
just being preserved
around.
Exactly.
You know,
maybe it's not producing more
and preserved.
That's a good point.
So, and maybe it is producing more, but regardless, you're keeping around a lot, preserving a lot more terpenes, I think, or
it might be a double edged.
A lot more terpenes in the end products from when I've grown in cold grows versus my summer grows, which can be, you know, very hard to maintain and can get pretty high heat.
Totally. That's true. Nice. Like, shoot through only 25 minutes from seed to harvest there. It was like there's a wonderful little journey through growing. We're going to spin it back around though, because that was all seeds. Cuttings. Everyone knows cutting strategies. The traditional cocoa mat cutting tray dome strategy. This is what I always did. Rizo Rich, you go get a tray, you get a little cocoa mat that sits in that. It's got a bunch of cubes. Maybe there's 20, maybe there's 50. You take your cuttings, maybe you dip them in a little cloning gel. You stick it in each little cube, pop a dome on it. You're spraying the cuttings so that they're feeding off of the humidity in the air since they don't have roots to eat yet. And slowly they'll start to develop roots in that wetted cocoa. And you're opening up the vents slowly to kind of, as their roots adjust, get them off of breathing that high humidity air for their sustenance. Exactly. Harden them off and start drinking from the roots and consuming gathering their energy from the roots. That's the whole, you know, standard baseline for taking cuttings. And I had great success with that. Some little tips, you might want to cut off the leaf tips of your cuttings. Maybe you've seen pictures where the little pointy fan leaves have been snipped back. That helps so that they're not crowding each other, but they still maintain a little bit of moisture content to sustain off of that leaf. You can go and look up a lot of good cutting tips. And even I believe there is a cutting guide in your resource section, if I'm not mistaken. So you can check all of that out. But Rizo Rich, I wanted to talk to you about some alternative methods. I know you said you like ditched the dome. You know, if you're in an aero cloner, for instance, is that what you're using?
Yeah, so I've done quite a few methods, and a lot of them I had really good success with. Rock wool cubes, kind of like you mentioned, I would dip them in like a rooting hormone, stick them in a moist rock wool cube, stick them in like a garden dome under, you know, a light, and they would root fine in there. Like me and you were talking about off air earlier, when I lived on an island, I didn't really have access to anything except the hardware store, so I was mixing up a 50-50 mix of perlite and vermiculite and cloning in that. I would just dip them in a root hormone and clone straight into the vermiculite perlite 50-50 mix. They'd just be in cups and they would root.
Did you just try that? Did someone show you that?
No, I read this. I cannot remember the reference, the book, who wrote it, anything, but it was an old cannabis growing book that my uncle had laying around, and it was the method for cloning, and it was an old book, probably
no
from the 80s
shit 50-50
or something,
vermiculite.
Yeah,
and
I was like, hey, I can actually get this stuff where I live, so you know, instead of driving 3 hours to get some damn rock wool, so I started using that, and it worked really, really good.
That's awesome. And, man. Yeah, I've got a little clone sitting in that right now, actually, and I'm surprised.
Yeah, I brought it back because I ran out of room.
That's nice.
It does work. You know, the success rate with the perlite vermiculite for me wasn't as high as my aero cloner, which is what I'm stuck on now, but it definitely will work. Absolutely.
That's really cool, man. Now, one thing that I'm thinking about is the best part about those cocoa cubes, and probably similar to the rock wool cubes, is you can check on the progress by simply busting off a cube and turning it upside down and seeing if there's roots poking out. And you can be the one to determine when you want to take that and stick it in soil. I mean, even if there's one little root coming out, you could make the move then if you wanted to.
Yeah.
I like to get it a little more established. Some people let it go longer to where there's a big beard and then they move it in.
Right.
So yeah, I mean, it really all depends there. How would you be able to tell in this vermiculite, do you let it fill up the whole cup and then try to transplant that? I feel like transplanting that is probably going to be pretty like loose, right? Vermiculite and perlite.
It is. it is a little loose when you transplant it, for sure, unless you let it fill up all the way, which is totally possible, and then it'll just kind of eat everything in the cup and have it form into one whole cube.
Oh.
And then you can transplant it, but you'll see roots, you know, at the holes or poking out of the holes, you know, once it's rooted.
They'll travel through there pretty
good. You can transplant it then, like you said, but it's probably going to be a little loose. If you let it hang out in there longer, you can let it tighten everything up and transplant it then.
Cool.
But either way, even if it's loose, you just, you know, just put it in there, cover it up nicely. It'll be fine.
Fuck yeah. But, that's a really interesting tip. And people can actually follow you on Instagram. You did a whole post about this, right?
Yeah, I did. Because like I said, I use an aero cloner now, but I ran out of room last week taking cuts. So, and I had vermiculite perlite laying around. So I was like, you know what? I don't have any rock wool. I don't have anything else. I'm just going to use this.
Fucking OG grower tricks, dude. That's awesome.
Yeah. And you know, you can clone straight in soil. I've done that before even too, but like you said, I like to be able to see when they're rooting, and the vermiculite perlite, you know, it's not as easy as rock wool, but it's a hell of a lot easier seeing if roots are there than, you know, sticking it in soil where it's, you don't see anything until it's, you know, grown out. But
it is a little weird to me because there's no dome either. You're just having it poking up, and I'm so used to the vents.
I always did a dome. I always did a dome. And I built this aero cloner homemade maybe a couple years ago. And when I started using it, I noticed that it didn't need a dome. The plants stayed praying up and turgid. You know, there's never any, they never wilted or anything in it. So I was like, you know, why am I going to put them in this dome if they look so good already? Because then, like you were talking about, now I'm going to have to go through a hardening off process and do that. Like if I just left the dome off them and let them clone in the aero cloner without the dome, once they're rooted, they can go straight in a pot and there's no hardening off period or, you know, dealing with that crap. So I just never put the dome on the aero cloner and it worked fine. And last week when I made up these perlite vermiculite cups, stuck some in there and fully intended on putting a dome on them because I'm like, all right, they're not in an aero cloner because, you know, I figure something to do with how the aero or the auto cloner is, it feeds water up at the bottom of the cuttings the entire time. So I figure maybe it's
that they replaces don't exactly
need a dome.
Yeah.
Because they're just sucking up water whenever they want. So maybe that's why they don't need the dome. So I figure with the cups, I'm like, they don't have that. They're going to be moist in the cup, but they're not going to be having constant, you know, water being pumped up at them, that I might want to put a dome over them. However, when I cut them, I didn't put the dome on, and they did so good overnight, never wilted, that I figure I was just going to roll with it and see how they went. And the ones I have are still doing good. And you said that the one I gave you is still looking decent. So maybe
these
won't need domes either. I mean, I think a lot of it to do with my tent where the auto cloner is and where I keep my cuttings, it is a humid tent. So maybe that helps.
That replaces it. Oh, it's doing well in mine too. And mine isn't even sealed right now. It's mostly sealed, but it's just kind of chilling.
Mine's not completely sealed either. And I have moved that cloner around from room to room, and some rooms aren't humid and it still never needed a dome. So
I love pushing back on common consensus, cloning without a dome. Fuck the dome.
Yeah, and you know, it's fine if you use it. There's nothing wrong with it.
I always use one.
I don't think you need it for every single situation,
right?
You know, I mean, if you live somewhere that's super dry like Colorado or something, you may have to have a dome. I don't know, but where I am in my situation, I haven't needed a dome for cloning in a while, and the reason I haven't used it is I feel like it speeds the whole process up because I'm not, you know, worrying, it's less work, so I'm not worrying about hardening off those clones. And you
it
know,
is definitely less work. Oh, I left the vent open too much. Yeah, I put it too close. So hey, if it's got a decent success rate, I'm down with this.
I can get roots in, you know, 7 to 9 or 10 days usually, and that's quick enough for me. I don't need to do anything, you know, else to make it even speedier. I'm not in a rush, you know. So if the dome sped it up a day or two, which I don't think it would, I still wouldn't do it, you know. It's just,
yeah. It is what it is,
man. They do fine without it.
They do fine with exactly. If it ain't broke, don't fix it.
I tell you what, though, I would recommend somebody who's cloning for the first time probably to use one.
That's what I was just saying.
It's going to make it easier for them to keep things moist. And, you know, I don't know what their home environment's like and if they're, you know, if it's humid in the area they're cloning. So, like I said, I feel like it may just be something specific to our area that, you know,
maybe
the way the temps and humidity are, it just helps keep them fine. I don't know.
I like the alternative methods either way, though, man. I love anything out of the ordinary like that. Even if it's
whatever works for you.
Ridiculed, like water curing is. I'm still gonna read up. I still want to talk to someone about these crazy topics. Anyways, I'm taking a left turn for no reason here. Rizo Rich, this was a good overview of seed popping, taking cuttings. We have a lot more points. Maybe we'll do a part two. Talk about up potting, talk about clone health, transition tips, maybe some foliar products. Let's do a second one, huh? We'll follow this up maybe next week or the week after with a part two. So stay tuned, listeners. Rizo Rich, thank you for doing this, my friend.
Oh, thank you. And thank you to all the listeners.
At Rizo Rich ICC, if you don't already follow him, I know a lot of you members are already following him, but check it out. IllinoisCannaConsulting.com, of course. Thank you, members, for everything you do. We've got tons of new stuff coming at you. The resource this month is going to be awesome. It's going to be a resource to help you decide which strains to grow. It's going to be really, really cool. I know you're going to like it. Everyone listening, thank you so much. Thank you for being members. We'll see you next time. This is Rizo Rich and Jordan River signing off, saying be safe out there and happy growing.
Later on.
There you have it, folks. Rizo Rich on the Member Podcast. If you like the Member Podcast, why don't you sign up for mygrowpass.com? You get a Member Podcast every week, ad-free. It drops on Wednesday. That's 4 podcasts a week between GrowCast, GrowPass, and the Homegrown Helpers, plus all the other benefits. We'd love to see you on the inside at mygrowpass.com. That's all for today, folks. I hope you're doing amazing in your garden. We'll see you next time. Bye-bye.